Copyright 2011, JKP, Radha Madhav Dham. All rights reserved.
Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj.
In this series, he incorporates all the main topics of the Hindu scriptures in a beautiful logical flow. The most prominent spiritual confusions of our time are addressed and resolved one by one as the series makes its way towards the culminating topic of bhakti and the path of God realization.
मन्नाथ श्री जगन्नाथो मद्गुरु श्री जगद्गुरु मदात्मा सर्वभूतात्मा तस्मै तस्मै तग्वंह देवमात्म बुद्धि प्रकाशम मुमुक्षुर्वै शरणमहं प्रपद्ये.
The divine souls, we'll do a few minutes of Nam Sankirtan, and after that we'll continue with the topic of tonight, which is Mahapurush.
राधे गोविंदा 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 Govinda. Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda. Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda. Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda.
Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda.
बोलिए श्रीमत सद्गुरु सरकार की। So far in this series, explaining the Vedic mantra, Tameva viditvati mrityumeti nanya pantha vidyate yanaya. I explained that there are three eternal tattva, Brahma, Jeev, Maya. All three, God, the souls, and Maya, have existed forever. And this mantra refers to each of them, saying that only by knowing God can this soul cross Maya. And we also learn that by crossing Maya, the soul will receive unlimited bliss, meaning true divine happiness, divine knowledge. And being released from Maya means being released from all sufferings, all kinds of sufferings, as well as being released from the cycle of birth and death. So in order to accomplish this, we have to know God. But going into the Vedas, we learned that a soul cannot know God on their own. A soul can only know God through God's grace. And how is God's grace attainable? Through sharanagati, through surrender. So any soul who surrenders to God receives God's grace, and through God's grace we know Him, we cross Maya, we're freed from all kinds of suffering, and we attain divine bliss and divine knowledge. But we also found that becoming surrendered is not something that can happen easily, because what needs to be surrendered is our mind. And our mind is already attached in samsara. So we don't have two minds, that we can keep one mind fully attached in the world and offer our other mind to God. No, we have one mind, and that mind is already occupied. It's already attached in the world. So then how could we surrender that same mind to God? So the next step was understanding how can we detach our mind from the world and attach our mind to God. So to detach our mind from the world, we understood why did we get attached in the world in the first place. And the answer was, well, we're all ansh of Bhagwan and He is divine happiness, so we naturally desire happiness. But then the next step is where the problem is. That first step is not a problem, and even it can't be changed anyway. We must desire happiness because we are ansh of God who is happiness. But the next thing that happens is seeing the world in front of us and having all kinds of worldly association, we then decide that I will get my happiness from this world, or maybe I can, or I hope I can. We develop faith of finding that happiness we desire from inside, we develop the faith that we will get that happiness from this world, and that's why we get attached in the world. And out of attachment comes kaam, desire. So once you're attached in the world, whatever things you're attached to, you desire those things. The desire comes naturally in your mind. And once you desire something, one of two things will happen. If you get that thing you desire, then you get a greed for more. And if you do not get that thing you desire, anger comes. So anger and greed are actually the product of desire. And there are many other affiliated problems of our mind, like jealousy and envy and hatred and hypocrisy. But all of these things stem from kaam, worldly desire. And that stems from attachment. And the attachment happened because we keep thinking of this world as the source of our happiness. That's why we get attached. And we think of this world as the source of our happiness because we have the wrong information. So we spent the last 2 days learning the right information. that the happiness we experience in this world is not true happiness. True happiness is in God. So don't stop desiring happiness, but desire your happiness from the place you can get it, from God. You can keep desiring happiness from this world for eternity and you will never get it. You can churn lime water all you want. It looks just like milk, right? Churn it for a million years, you won't get butter out of it. You have to churn milk to get butter. So the happiness is in God. If you surrender to Him, you'll get happiness. If you remain attached in this world, you can never get true happiness. So we understood that the mind has to be attached in God, and to do that, we have to repeatedly review this correct knowledge that what is the true nature of this world and what is the true nature of the so-called happiness we experience in this world. So gradually that knowledge will go deeper and deeper in our mind, and the more we understand that simple fact, there's no happiness in the world, there's happiness in God, the more we understand that, the deeper it goes, the more detached we get from the world and the more attached we get to God. But to make this happen, we need the help of one other factor. And that factor is a Mahapurush, a spiritual master, a guru. The scriptures say, Tad vijnanartham saguru mevabhigachet samit Pani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtham. Shvetashvatra Upanishad says, if you wish to know God, you need the help of a God-realized saint. You need the help of a guru. Gita says the same thing. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadek Chantite Gyanam Gyaninas Tattva Darshina. If you want to know God, you must surrender to a guru. Ask that guru questions to clear your doubts. Serve him, and he will give you the knowledge of God. Bhagavatam says, Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam shabde parecha nishnatam brahmanyu pashamashrayam. The same thing. If you want to know God, surrender to a guru. Acharyavan purusho hi veda. Ved says, you can only know God with the help of a guru. Ramayan also says the same thing. Guru binu hoi ki gyan. Without a guru, we never learned anything. Even something as simple as the ABCs, or if you were learning Hindi, ka, kha, ga, gha, nobody learned this on their own. We had a teacher. Even you couldn't know on your own how to draw ka. Someone had to show you, take you by the hand, do like this, that's ka, this is ka. Everything, step by step. When we can't even learn such a simple thing on our own, how could we even dream of finding God on our own without the help of a qualified teacher? So, a guru is to help you find God. That's it. One reason for a guru. Guru binu bhavanidhi tarai na koi jo biranchi shankar sam hoi. Even if someone is as great as Brahma or Shiva, they still need the help of a guru to cross this ocean of maya and reach God. So it makes logical sense that to know God, you need the help of a guru. So, what should the qualifications be of that guru that we seek the help of in order to find God? These same verses that I quoted to you, many of them also tell us the exact qualification of what a guru is. The first verse I quoted from Vedas said, Shrotriyam Brahmanishtham. Gita, in different words, said, Jnanina Tattva Darshina. And the Bhagavatam said, in different words, Shabde Pare Chanishnatam. All three of these statements mean the same thing. The guru must have theoretical knowledge, meaning the knowledge of the scriptures, the literal knowledge of the scriptures, through which he explains everything to the souls who are desiring of that knowledge. That's Shrotriyam. And Brahmanishtham, Nisht, means established in, perfectly. Na chalati bhagavat padarvinda lavanimishardha mapiya savaishnavagriya Bhagavatam. A saint's mind never diverts from the lotus feet of his beloved God even for a fraction of a second. So he's perfectly established in God. See, we have to try to remember God. We try to remember God and our mind goes to the world. The saint doesn't have to try to think of God. Even if the saint tries to forget God, he can't. His body, mind, and soul are fully impregnated with God, His divine bliss, His divine knowledge. So the saint is Brahma, God, Nisht, completely permeated, impregnated, like he's one with God. So, in other words, what it means is, he's had the practical experience of God. He's having the practical experience of God. So, not only a theoretical knowledge of God based on the scriptures, but experience. See, it's like the difference between reading a cookbook about how to make something like a chocolate cake. So you read about it, okay, these ingredients are required, I have to mix them in this way, then I put it in this kind of pan and I keep it in the oven for that long. So you read about it, you memorize it, but you never do it. And then you go out and start giving lectures on this is how you bake a chocolate cake. Because I read it in that book, it said this is how you do it. But you have no idea when you actually try baking the cake how many problems come along the way that weren't mentioned in the recipe book. You only find that out when you try. So having the actual experience of making the cake is one thing and having the theory of making the cake is another. So, having theoretical knowledge of God based on the scriptures is one thing, and having the actual experience of God is another. Or put it this way, would you like to hear from someone, let's say you've never tasted sugar or anything sweet in your life, and your friend who's also never tasted sugar or anything sweet in his life, he gets a book. Someone wrote their whole thesis on the taste of sugar. So he studied that book from start to finish. It took him a whole year. His whole head is full of this knowledge. What is sugar? What's its chemical formula? How does it taste? What happens to your body when you eat it? What happens to your blood? All of that. He's got it all memorized. But he himself has never tasted sugar. And he comes to you and he says, would you like me to tell you about what sugar is like? What's the sense? You can read the same book he read. Neither of you know what sugar tastes like. So the saint has to have actually attained God, tasted sugar, then his words have weight. There's something behind it. It's not just something he read. So this is Brahmanisht. Having had the actual experience of God, then there's experience behind what the saint is saying. It's not just empty words or nice words. It's not just oratory. The saint is actually talking from his experience. And what do we want? We want the thing the saint has. We want divine bliss. We want divine knowledge. See, divine knowledge is not something you learn, actually. In this world, you can learn something by reading a book. Like, if you're studying to be a doctor, you study all the systems of the body, how they work, biology, chemistry, all of these things. So, you're actually learning that by reading words on a page. You can't learn anything about God by reading words on a page or by hearing a speech. So when the saint gets divine knowledge, it's not like God gives him a book. Okay, here's divine knowledge. Now you have divine knowledge. No, it's divine power that entered into him. So his whole mind, senses, everything became divine. So God entered into his mind and senses. So divine knowledge is not something separate from God. God is divine knowledge. So when the saint attains God, you can say he becomes the form of that divine knowledge. He becomes the form of that divine bliss. So it's from that position that the saint speaks, not just talking about theory. So now we understand the qualification of a saint. The saint has to be both well versed in the scriptures so that he can explain it to people in a way that they can understand and have faith in. If the saint is not quoting from the scriptures, how will ordinary people have faith? They can wonder, you could be making this up. But if it's based on the Vedas, then the saint has his own experience. He doesn't need to quote from the Vedas or Gita, but he does because the people understand the authenticity of those scriptures. So the saint validates his teachings by showing that it's based on those eternal scriptures. It's not something he's making up. It's not something new that he's presenting to the world. It's based on the scriptures. It's the same knowledge from the scriptures that all of the saints in history have taught. And he has the actual experience of God, not just this theoretical knowledge, which means he can give us initially a theoretical understanding, but eventually he gives us the same divine knowledge that he has and the same divine bliss. Can an orator or someone versed in the theoretical knowledge of the scriptures impart divine bliss to any one of his followers? No. It's like writing a check for $1 million. Any one of us could do it. Not me, because I don't own a checkbook. But any one of you who have a checkbook, you can write 1 followed by 6 zeros and sign your name to it and hand it to someone. And he'll say, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. And when he goes to the bank and deposits it, obviously the check's going to bounce. So that's what happens to the checks written by someone who has not attained God. He can write all kinds of checks, but there's nowhere to go and cash it in. He can't give something he doesn't have. If you go to a beggar and say, please give me $1 million, that beggar, what can he do? Even if he wants to grace you with $1 million, he puts his hand in his pocket. He says, this $1 bill is all I have. I'm giving it to you. So someone who hasn't attained God has nothing to give in terms of divine bliss. They may be able to recite verses from the scriptures. Anyone can memorize verses from Vedas, Gita, Bhagavatam, Ramayana. Some people have the whole Gita memorized. That doesn't mean they've attained God. So in terms of divine bliss, they have nothing in their bank account with which to write you a check. The saint is actually equipped to give you divine bliss, not just theoretical knowledge. That's the difference between a scholar and a God-realized saint. So our Vedas actually define the word guru. Grinati jnanam iti guru. Girati agyanam iti guru. Gumrauti iti guru. The guru is the one who imparts real knowledge, who eliminates ignorance, and in the end eliminates the mayic bondage of his surrendered disciple. So giving knowledge, this is one definition of guru, the one who gives knowledge. The one who removes ignorance is also the guru, which is a natural outcome of giving knowledge. But gu, in this sense, actually means darkness. And ru means nikalne wala. So the one in darkness means maya. The one who eliminates maya. Remember I told you a few days ago, maya cannot be destroyed. So if you surrender to a God-realized saint, that saint will not destroy maya. He will eliminate the bondage of maya on you. He will eliminate the effect of maya on his surrendered disciple. So this is what a guru does. Let's learn in a little more detail about what a guru is by seeing that in our scriptures, actually, the guru is compared to God in three different ways. In some places in our scriptures, it is said that God is greater than the guru. In some places in our scriptures, it is said that guru is greater than God. And in some places it says that God and Guru are one, meaning they're equal. So, for instance, in Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it says, no one could be equal to God. Natat samascha bhyadhika kuto nyaha. Natat samascha bhyadhikascha drishyate. No one could be equal to God, let alone greater than God. Gita says the same thing. Natvat samostyabhyadhika kuto nyo. Lokatraye pya pratima prabhav. Arjun says to Krishna, no one in all the three worlds could compare to you. No one is equal to you or greater than you. So it makes sense. How could anyone be greater than God? But we also find statements in our scriptures. Nasti tattvam guroh samam. Vedavyasji writes, there is no tattva equal to or greater than the guru. We also see in Ramayana, more man as vishvasa, more man prabhu as vishvasa, ram te adhik ram kardasa. Ram's saint is greater than Ram himself. And we also find statements like Naradji's statement, where he says, God and Guru are exactly equal. tadjane bheda bhavat. There is no bhed between God and Guru. Bhakti bhakt bhagavant guru chatur naam bapu ek. God, Guru, Bhakti, Saint, they all are different words for the same thing. So they're all equal. So it's interesting that we see all these different statements. Can they all be true? On one hand, the scriptures are saying God is greater than Guru. On the other hand, they're saying Guru is greater than God. And they're also saying Guru and God are one and the same. So let's look at each one individually. Why is God greater than Guru? Well, yato va imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayantyabhisam vishanti tad brahma. Taittiriya Upanishad says, everything, all the souls, this whole universe, it goes back into God during Mahapralaya. It came from Him. It's currently existing within Him. So when everything is from God, in God, goes back within God, how could anything be greater than God? So God, in terms of size, is greater than everyone. Everyone's existence depends on God. All the souls get their life from God. So what is a Mahapurush? What is a saint? Just a soul like you and I who surrendered to God and got His grace. So with God's grace, he became, in terms of power, equal to God. Bhoga matra samya lingacha. Brahma Sutra says, in terms of the experience of divine bliss, the Guru is not less than God. Whatever bliss God has, He gave that to the saint. So now the saint is equal to God in terms of the experience of divine bliss. Yasmin gyate sarvamidam vigyatam bhavati. Once you know God, Ved says, there's nothing more to know. You know everything. Brahmavid brahmaiva bhavati. Ved also says, once you know God, you become the same as God. Janat tumai hoi jai. Ramayana says the same thing. Once you know God, you become just like God. So in terms of knowledge, in terms of divine bliss, God and Guru are exactly equal. But there's one major difference. Jagat vyapara varjam. Brahma Sutra says, Guru is not given the job of srishti. God creates, maintains, and destroys the universe. God keeps track of the karmas of the souls. God gives the consequences of karmas. No soul is given these responsibilities. So on one hand, God is greater than the Guru, because how did the Guru become equal to God in terms of bliss and knowledge and power? God gave him that power. So how could the saint challenge God? He cannot. Yet, at the same time, God says himself in the Bhagavatam, Anubrajamyaham nit. And aham bhakta paradhino yasvatantra ivadvija sadhu bhirgrasta hridayo bhaktair bhakta janapriya. He says, I am paradhin to my saints. I follow behind them like a servant. I wish to receive their foot dust on my head, Krishna is saying. So why is the Guru considered greater than God? From what perspective? Certainly not from the perspective of power. whatever God had, he gave to the Guru. Just like a father giving everything to his son, like a king who decides it's time for me to go to the forest. Son, you take over the kingdom. Here, I'm giving it to you in writing. God does the same thing. When a soul fully surrenders, he gives everything. He doesn't hold back anything. Like, oh, you're just a little soul. I know I have unlimited of everything, but you're just a little soul, so you take a little bit of bliss, little bit of knowledge. No, he gives unlimited everything. Whatever he has, he gives everything. So, in terms of power, does the saint have more power than God? No. Same power as God. But who gave the power? God gave it. So he's obviously greater than a saint. No saint could be greater than God. No soul could be greater than God. Even after God realization, a soul is still a soul and God is still God. It's just that now you have the experience of God. You can talk to him if you want to. You can stay with him, be with him, but you're still a soul and he is still God. So from what point of view is a saint greater than God? From our point of view. Because from where we stand right now, like I've explained several times, we can't see God. So God is omnipresent. Are we experiencing that or getting any direct benefit from that? No. He's sitting in our heart right now. Are we experiencing that or getting any benefit from that? Nope. If he walked through those doors right now, let's say he took avatar right here, and we all saw him, would we get any benefit from that? No. I've explained this already, that you need divine eyes to recognize God's divinity, so even if you meet him face to face, when he's taking avatar, you won't get any benefit. So then how can we reach him? God himself can't come to us and explain that I'm God. And just like, let's say we were sitting there with Arjun listening to the Gita, and Krishna is saying, Matta parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya. I'm God, and there's nothing beyond me. Everything is within me. And we're seeing someone who looks like an ordinary man to us, because our eyes are mayic. And this ordinary looking individual is saying, I'm God, and everything is within me. But what are we seeing? He's just sitting here on a chariot and the whole world is around him. He doesn't look like God to me. So God coming to us and explaining about himself would not help. So he sends his saints. Saints come on the earth planet and explain about him to us, so that we can understand, who am I? Who is God? What's my relationship to God? And how can I reach him? All of that is explained to us by the saints. Then they also help us on the path. Just explaining the knowledge is only part of it. That develops the desire in a soul to meet God. Then we have to follow the path. So the saint also explains the path. This part is coming up towards the end of the week. What is the path we have to follow to get to God? The saint explains that. He answers our questions along the way. In other words, he does everything right with us, helping us along the way, just like a teacher, a devoted, dedicated teacher who takes his student right up to graduation. So the saint gets us to the point where we're fully surrendered to God, and then God appears before us. So who did all the hard work? The saint did. Kripaluji Maharaj gives a humorous example for us to understand this, that just like if you have a daughter and you raise your daughter, you teach her everything, you make give her all the skills, give her education, teach her proper manners, teach her everything she needs to know. Then when she's 20 years old, some boy comes along, takes an interview, decides, oh yes, I want to marry this girl, and he takes her away. So who did all the hard work? You did. And when she was full grown and fully educated and skilled and everything, then that boy comes along and says, thank you, let's go. So who does that work? Guru does that work. Guru takes us from being spoiled, uneducated little children and gets us up to the point where we're fully surrendered to God. In other words, God comes when we're fully grown, clean, purified, ready to meet Him. But who got us to that point? Guru did. Nirmal man so mohi pava mohi kapat chhal chidra na bhava. Ram says, I won't come to you if you have any kapat chhal, nothing in the heart. Clean it all out. When your man is nirmal, then I'll come to you. To kaun banayega nirmal? Guru banayega. So, from our point of view, the importance of the Guru is more than God, because God will come to us when our heart is fully purified. But who will purify our heart? The Guru does all of that hard work, answers our questions, explains everything to us, teaches us proper sadhana, takes us all the way up to that point. Then God comes. Guru Govind do khare ka ke lagu payam. Kabir Das says, if both Krishna and your Guru are standing before you, who should you do pranam to first? Balihari. You have to do balihar, you have to do pranam to your Guru first, because it was through His grace that you reached God. So although from a point of view of power, God and Guru are equal, and from a point of view of, you know, constitutionally speaking, no one can be greater than God, but from our own selfish point of view, the Guru is more important, because the Guru gets us to God. But there's one other statement found in our scriptures. You see, I proved to you that all three statements are one and are actually correct. God is greater than Guru. This is correct. Guru is greater than God from one perspective. This is correct. And Guru and God are equal, because now that Guru has attained God, he's become just like God. But there's one other statement we find. Krishna says to Uddhav in the Bhagavatam, Acharyam mam vijaniyan navamanyeta karhichit namartya buddhya suyeta sarvadeva mayo guru. Krishna says, don't look at the Guru as someone else. He says, Acharyam mam vijaniyat. Vijaniyat means jano. Know this, that I am the Guru, Krishna is saying. In other words, I have come to you in the form of that God-realized saint. His body is his, but who's inside? Krishna says, I am. The Guru has nothing more to do. Veda Vyasa says, Krita Kritya. His doing is done. All the doing we have to do is to get up to what point? To the point we're fully surrendered to God. Then we reach that point of doing nothing. But we see the saint is still doing something. He's walking, he's talking, he's giving pravachan, he's helping souls, he's eating, sleeping, drinking. So Guru is still doing things. The God-realized saint still does things even after having nothing left to do. So who is doing? God is doing. Remember I gave you the analogy that if someone the driver pulls over the car and Malik takes over, and the driver gets in the back and just goes to sleep. That's what the saint does. The saint is not performing his own actions. God is sitting inside. He's the driver. He's the governor. Why would the saint do anything? I explained to you many times in this series that the reason behind every single action of every soul is the desire for Anand. So the saint has attained that Anand. Now why should he do anything? There's no reason left. The reason is gone now. He has Anand, so why would he do anything? If the saint is sitting, you should ask him, why are you sitting? You shouldn't be doing anything. You got Anand, right? So a normal person sits for Anand. When he gets tired of sitting, he'll stand. When he gets tired of standing, he'll lie down. Why? For Anand. So, Mr. Mahapurush, Mr. Saint, why are you sitting? Okay, I'll lie down then. Why are you lying down? Shouldn't be lying down. You already have Anand. You shouldn't be doing anything. Okay, I'll go to sleep. Why are you sleeping? People sleep for Anand. The saint shouldn't be doing anything. So why does he do anything? Because God is inside of him and God is using that saint to help the souls of the world. Think about it that way. The saint has nothing more to do for himself. Whatever the saint is doing is to help the souls. So that statement of Kabir Das, Jo Karai So Hari Karai, we cannot use that statement. I covered this topic earlier in the week too. If one of us says, Oh ha humse wo galat kaam hua tha, but it must have been the will of God. No. We do things according to our own will, for better or for worse. But a saint has fully surrendered to God and has no reason to do anything. So now whatever the saint is doing, God is doing through that saint. So that's why Krishna says, Acharyam mam bijaniyat. You see the saint's body, but it's not him on the inside, it's me. So from one point of view, God is greater than the saint. From another point of view, the saint is greater than God. From another point of view, both are equal, but actually both are one and the same. So now the question comes, now that we understand a little bit about what is a saint? What is the definition of the saint? What is the qualification of the saint? What is our need for such a saint? Now the next question comes, how to recognize such a saint? Our scriptures say that a saint has no desire of any kind, as I was just explaining. From inside, no desire, no selfish desire, no worldly desire. So you might think, okay, I'll just go and find someone with no desires. Any one of us sitting here could act as if we have no desires. At least in public we could. In private, we would find a way to act out according to our worldly desires. But in public, any one of us could put on an act and make people think, oh yes, this person has no anger. Did you see that? He got insulted and he didn't even get angry. Yeah, that's because he wants to make you think that he has no anger, because he's posing as a saint, has no desires, no anger. It's easy to act like that in public. Understand it this way. There are four kinds of people in the world. Two are saints and two aren't. So the two kinds of saints are those who openly disclose their inner nature, meaning what's the real state, the natural state of a saint would be to be completely absorbed in God's love all the time, to the point of not even being able to communicate to anyone in this world. Completely ecstatic, absorbed in states of divine bliss. If one of us saw such a saint, we would think he looks like a crazy person. He's unable to relate to the world or the people of the world. He's in his own world. Yes, he is. He's in his own divine world. That's the natural state of a saint. So some saints, very rarely, manifest that natural inner state outwardly. But 99.9% of saints hide that. Gopaniyam, 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 prayatnataha. It's the nature of a saint to control his divine bliss, that ocean of divine bliss, so that he's not just, you know, laughing or... You don't see that he controls it on the inside so he can act appropriately in the world according to our social norms. So you have most of the saints acting like a normal person. Even some saints, many saints in history, lived a normal life. They didn't act as sannyasis. A saint does not have to be a sannyasi. The gopis are considered the greatest saints of all. Tad bhuri bhagya miha janma kim apyatavyam tad gokule pikatamanghri rajo bhishekam yad jivitam tu nikhilam bhagavan mukundas tvadyapiyat padarajah shruti mrigyameva bhagutam. Brahma says, I want the foot dust of the gopis because they're that highest class of saint. Uddhava, a jnani saint, says the same thing. Asa maho charana renu jusha mahansyam vrindavane kimapi gul malatau shadhinam ityadi. I want the foot dust of the gopis. Who are those gopis, physically speaking? Ordinary women and girls of Braj 5,000 years ago during the time of Krishna's dissension. Uneducated wives and mothers. So looking at them, could we ever guess they're the highest class of Mahapurush? No. Many saints ruled as kings. Arjun, Dhruv, Prahlad, Ambarish, Janak. These are saints not just living ordinary lives, ruling great kingdoms. So when you have saints, most of whom conceal their inner divine nature and act like ordinary people in the world, those are the two kinds of saints. Now you have two kinds of ordinary people in the world. Some people, like you and I, who just what we are on the inside, meaning we have kaam, we have krodh, we have lobh, the whole world knows it. Although we try to behave like good people in the world, nobody thinks we're saints. They know, okay, he's ordinary just like me. But there are some ordinary people who are the same as us on the inside who act like saints. And they try to take advantage of our stereotypical image of a saint. That we think, first of all, a saint has to be a sannyasi, has to have a beard, long hair, dress a certain way, should not have any anger, should not have any greed. So, capitalizing on this, that they know what do people think a saint looks like and behaves like, they try to act and look the same way. So think of the situation. You have saints behaving like ordinary people, and you have ordinary people behaving like saints, and then you have us who need the help of a true, real saint in order to find God. How are we to distinguish between who's a real saint and who isn't a real saint? So that topic we will take up tomorrow. And we'll finish now with a kirtan that has some of this philosophy of guru in it, which is written by Kripaluji Maharaj.
Jayati Guru Var, Jayati Guru Var, Jayati Guru Var Pyare, Jayati Guru Var, Jayati Guru Var, Jayati Guru Var Pyare, Jayati Guru Var Pyare. Jayati Guru Var, Jayati Guru Var Pyare.
ज्ञान हरि को
Shruti Puranan Pyare, Shruti Puranan Pyare. हरि मिलन की साधना भी प्यारे तू बतावे हरि मिलन की साधना भी प्यारे साधना भी प्यारे तो तू प्रेम भी दे प्यारे शुद्ध मन हो जाय तू तू प्रेम भी दे प्यारे प्रेम भी दे प्यारे
हरी की करहु तस भक्ति
ki karu guru pyare bhakti jas hari ki karahu tas bhakti karu guru pyare bhakti karu guru pyare प्यारे गुरु ही ऋण ते ऋण नहीं को प्राण दे प्यारे प्राण दे प्यारे भज हरि ही गुरु भज भेद नहीं दो प्यारे गुरु ही हरि ही गुरु भज भेद नहीं दो प्यारे भेद नहीं दो प्यारे जयति गुरुवर जयति गुरुवर प्यारे जयति गुरुवर जयति गुरुवर प्यारे जयति गुरुवर प्यारे जयति गुरुवर जयति गुरुवर प्यारे जयति गुरुवर प्यारे बोलिए श्री राघवेंद्र सरकार की जय। So this series only has a few days left, 5 more days left, and the timings will be the same. Every day continuing tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday is the last day, from 7 to 8:30 each day. And just so you're all aware that we do have, other than the time when I'm here in New York, we do have weekly gatherings, weekly satsangs, where we meet and we practice everything that I've been teaching this whole series. So we have an hour and a half or 2 hour satsang, and during that time we watch a pravachan by my Guruji, Kripaluji Maharaj. We do kirtan, we do meditation, chanting, arti, those things. So there is a continuous satsang going on here of this kind in the New York area. And if you want to know about that, you can give your email address up here. We have the e-list. There's also a couple of other flyers for other upcoming programs that I have in the area.